Then we had the New Prime versus Oliveira case. The New Prime case said, well, the FAA has rules that courts will enforce arbitration agreements, but there's an exception, and the exception is under Section 1. And the one in Section 1 was very important to the court because it came first. And the court said, yes, but remember, there's a carve-out under Section 1 of the of the FAA, and it says that the FAA does not apply to employments of or contracts for employment, right? Those three words, contracts for employment, very important in this case. Those will not apply, okay, if it's workers and they're engaged in interstate commerce, et cetera, et cetera. And in that case, the court said, no, the courts must decide that issue because that's the exception and it came first. And so that opinion was issued 7 days later. So what does that tell us? It tells us that for 7 days, we had clarity and then it ended. So the arbitrator is going to decide unless it's one of these claims, in which case the court's going to decide, and you're back into the morass of which one actually applies. And the court said, look, in this particular case, it was a trucking company. The individual in question was a trucker. He said he's an independent contractor. They said it doesn't apply because you're an independent contractor. Court said that doesn't really matter. Contracts of employment doesn't mean literally employer or employee. It means any such contract, and the courts must decide if it's a Section 1 exemption. So a little bit of clarity, perhaps not so much, who knows. But a little bit more clarity here. We've all seen, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, what happens with our arbitration agreements and class actions in the context of arbitrations. And there's been a lot of discussion as of late as to whether or not class action actually fits within an arbitration, right? Are arbitrators actually qualified to handle class actions? And the court said, look, unless your agreement specifically says, allows, and provides for a class action, there's not going to be one that's implied. So really from the employer's side, that's probably a little bit of a breath of fresh air and a little bit of a relief, right, that we don't have to worry about class actions within our arbitration agreements. Hopefully, if you have arbitration agreements, your arbitration agreement specifically says you're waiving your right to a class representation, but this actually helps go a little bit further along that way. So we've now seen, because after the Epic system, and I want to just talk to you with some statistics about this, that there's kind of a tide moving the other way, right? So we had all of these arbitration agreements, and look at some of the statistics I gave you, right? In 1992, 2% of employees had arbitration agreements, okay? In 1999, it's 55%. If your company employs 1,000 employees or more, it's 65%. 52 of the Fortune 100 companies have employee arbitration agreements. Let me give you a couple of other statistics about how these cases have come out. In federal court, the plaintiff wins 36.4% of the time. In arbitration, the plaintiff wins 21.4% of the time. In federal court, the average award is $176,000. In arbitration, it's $36,500, okay? So as a result, we've seen kind of a backlash, and we started seeing this originally in the Me Too section that I'll talk about in a little bit, where people said, wait, we shouldn't have mandatory arbitration, particularly in that context, because that buries these problems, and these problems ought not be buried. And so now we're starting to see some federal legislation that talks about repealing the Epic decision, allowing for employment arbitrations, and saying, no, we're not going to allow that. So I want you to put this on your radar to watch this, because it's likely we're going to see more and more of this coming up, of kind of this backlash against arbitration. I mean, even look at the title of one of the acts, the Forced Arbitration Injustice Repeal. I mean, does that kind of tell you what they think about it, right? Nobody's really wild about that from the employee side. And given the statistics that I read you, that's not really surprising. We, even in the law firms, have seen a lot of movement to say, well, you need to get rid of those, particularly in your sexual harassment claims. But we all know that very rarely does a claim come where it's just pure, right? It's always, oh, it was this and that and that. So just, again, keep an eye out for that, because the pendulum, as it always does, is starting to swing back a little bit the other way. Quick update on our judicial appointees. The Trump administration has appointed 102 appointees. I actually think as of yesterday it was 103 because another appellate court judge was appointed, so two at the Supreme Court level. I think now 38 at the appellate court level. District court, 63, 144 vacancies. I bring this to your attention because many have suggested, given kind of who the current administration is picking for its federal judicial candidates, which are mostly male, mostly fairly young in their 40s and 50s. I love being able to say that's young. And fairly conservative. Those people are going to be on the bench with appointments for a life for quite a while. I don't know that the Trump administration is appointing people quicker than other prior administrations have, but there's a lot of talk that this will be a very long-lasting legacy of this administration.